just make sure we understand. Is it Amityville? Amityville. I always want to put like an N in there.
Amity.
I
think
it's Amity.
Amityville. Amityville. It's not Amityville. Well, I'm sure that's not going to cause a nightmare.
I think
later
we should
on.
also mention
our show.
Mention how we got really drunk one night and tried watching the Amityville Horror House and taking notes. Even though that
I don't think we should mention that. That's just going to lose us all credibility.
Yeah.
No, but I was going to say.
Do you want to read how stupid the notes
difference.
Are? Oh, by the way.
You have the notes?
Yeah, of course I have the notes. It's our outline. The Amityville tale might be one of you're familiar with through depictions such as Amityville Horror in 2005, but the legend was created from a story that is as haunted as Annabelle. Not a bad opener. Honestly.
You wrote that drunk. That's pretty impressive.
One night, a man named Ronnie, and that's the end of that point. House, don't kill people. People kill people.
Nice.
Would you guys move into a house that a murder happened in? Oh, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
Would you guys move into a house? I don't know if any of this is usable. Would you guys move into a house that a murder happened in? You know, maybe we should save that question until after the murder story.
Yeah, we could talk about it after.
Yeah. All right. Let's go forward, Jamin.
Anyways. Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Unsolved Dimension. I'm one of your hosts today, Adam. And alongside me is Isaiah.
Hey, what's going on?
And Jamin.
Oh, we're going to be going back to New York. But what's the difference between a New York and a Boston accent?
We've still never gotten to the bottom of that. We're still trying to figure it out. We need to go to some improv classes and have them teach us accents.
It's definitely a must.
That is top of the bucket list. Bottom of the life achievements. All right. So this week, we are going to explore an infamous legend that has been featured in no less than 21 movies and numerous books. We are talking about 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville, Long Island, New York, or as most people know it, the Amityville Horror House.
Horror House.
Horror. Horror.
Horror House.
Horror.
Hey, I heard a funny joke. What's the difference in an enzyme and a hormone?
What?
You can't hear an enzyme.
So.
just go.
Is this house possessed by a demon that commands people to kill? Was the land part of the Indian slave trade? Or were all of these stories made up trying to put reason behind the horrible actions of a single person that was mentally ill? To answer these questions, we need to start by understanding the DeFeo family and what led to the events that occurred on November 13th, 1974. The DeFeos were a regular suburban family. The Italian Catholic family consisted of 7 members. Big Ronnie was the nickname their father was known by throughout the community. He owned and operated a local repair shop. Their mother, Louise DeFeo, was a kind woman that came from a wealthy family. Big Ronnie felt insecure when compared with his successful father-in-law, and this led to him having a short temper at home with his children. Ronnie DeFeo Jr. was the oldest child and preferred to go by the nickname Butch. Butch would often receive beatings from his father and would regularly stand up for his other siblings by taking their share of the punishments. Dawn DeFeo was 5 years younger than Butch and wanted nothing more than to escape her family, often staying with her boyfriend for days at a time. Allison DeFeo was 5 years younger than Dawn. Allison was talented, smart, and beautiful. Allison had a bright future ahead of her and a quiet determination that was unlike any of the other children. Mark was 1 year younger than Allison and destined to be a sports star. Mark was the son that Big Ronnie always wanted and showed real potential on the football field starting at a very young age. John Matthew was the youngest child who came 3 years after Mark. John Matthew was a fun-loving kid that would spend most days of his summer at the pool or begging his older siblings to go on boating excursions. In 1965, the family moved from Brooklyn to Amityville. The home was a gift from Louise's father. The family never reported any strange paranormal occurrences to their pastor, friends, or neighbors. A few years after moving into the house, Butch was in his late teens and started to drink and experiment with drugs, including heroin and LSD. Butch soon adopted a heroin addiction and carried the habit into his 20s. Big Ronnie continued to abuse his family and became increasingly paranoid that the mob was out to get him. It's believed that his father-in-law had deep connections with the mob, and due to the rough relationship the two of them had, Big Ronnie was not on good terms with these powerful men in his community. It all came to a boiling point on November 12th, 1974. Big Ronnie snapped and started senselessly beating and yelling at his wife and five children. Luis was able to get to the phone and call Butch, who was working at the time. Butch rushed home and subdued Big Ronnie. It seemed that the incident was over until the following day.
Whose father-in-law? Why is it a father-in-law?
Big Ronnie's father-in-law, so Luis's father, was the one that bought the house and is like involved with the mafia, the mob, and got some
powerful friends.
Yeah, so he's intimidated by his father-in-law and takes it out on his family.
So I have a question, Jamin. What happened at exactly 6:30 p.m. on November 13th, 1974?
Well, that next day at 6:30, Butch ran into Henry's bar in Amityville and said, "You gotta help me! I think my mother and father are shot!" Butch and a small group of men rushed out the bar and drove straight to 112 Ocean Avenue. The men ran into the house and quickly realized that they were too late. All the family members were laying dead in their beds, covered in blood-soaked sheets. The police were called, and upon further inspection, they discovered the killings were done with a .35 caliber rifle, the same type of rifle that was owned by Big Ronnie. Butch was put into police protection and claimed that a mob hitman must have been responsible. The lead investigator found consistent issues with Butch's story and concluded that Butch was the leading suspect of the case. Within a week of the murders, Butch came clean and admitted to killing the family.
So, in some of my research as well, there's a lot of people that think Butch was not the only shooter in the case. They think there was two people that committed this crime.
Ah, we got a JFK situation.
I mean, it's a lot of people to shoot without anybody, like, running out of the house or anything. Because I'm pretty sure they said that they didn't even, like, wake up.
No, that's the weird thing. The autopsies proved that there was no poisons in their system, no sleeping pills, no anything that would put them under. And the fact that they were all sleeping sound in their bed and undisturbed and then just shot, like, this, a .35 caliber rifle is loud. You can hear it for about five blocks.
Even a .22 in their house would have been loud.
Yeah. None of the family woke up, and one of the neighbors, they even said that they heard the dog barking at between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, but no reports of 8 gunshots in total.
Yeah, it just seems weird.
Shit, yeah. I can hear gunshots outside my house that are pretty far away, like a couple streets.
Couple streets?
I don't live in the best area.
It's fine. It wasn't discovered until 6:30 what all took place, but I mean, that next morning, the kids were picked up by one of the family friends every morning at 8:30, and she came by. The two cars were still there, but the kids didn't come out, so she ran her kids to school and came back thinking like, okay, maybe they're ready to go now. They didn't come out. The lady knocked on the door. Nobody answered, so that was weird. And then the mailman stopped by, and he reported saying like, yeah, I didn't hear their dog barking. Normally the dog barks every day when I come by. So that was kind of strange.
So did Butch get like arrested and convicted or?
Yes. Butch went to court on October 14th, 1975. The news was buzzing with the story. This was like the biggest topic. So they just wanted to get him in court and try to get this over with, done and out of the way. Because a six-person homicide is massive news. His defense lawyer, William Weber, mounted an affirmative defense of insanity. Butch said that he killed his family in self-defense because he heard voices saying that they were plotting to kill him. The case didn't hold, and Butch was found guilty of 6 counts of second-degree murder. Butch is currently serving 6 sentences of 25 years to life at Sullivan Correctional Facility in the town of Fallsburg, New York. So the family, when they were killed, starting from the parents, it was Ronald Defoe Sr., who was 43, Luis was 42, Butch himself, he was 23, the oldest child, then Don, 18, Allison, 13, Mark, 12, and John Matthew was only 9. I think it's pretty bold to go with the insanity plea. Adam, do you have a track record knowledge of like how well that usually turns out?
Not exactly, but like with affirmative defenses, it's on the defense to prove that he was insane. So typically in cases, like, the prosecution has the burden of proof, so they have to prove that the person they're accusing did the crime. But with affirmative defenses, the defense has to prove, so the prosecution doesn't have to do anything. If they can't prove that he's really insane, then it fails.
Butch, you killed younglings. Liar.
So affirmative defenses are like self-defense, entrapment, insanity, necessity, and just a few others. But if he does, if they claim insanity and prove it, then he has no legal consequences. So that doesn't mean he just gets to roam free. Typically they get put in like a
asylum.
Yeah.
Those, we know how well those people get treated. Check out last week's episode, The Hook / Cropsey, to learn more. Now, Butch, he also claimed that he was approached by a hooded figure late that night with black hands holding the rifle. And some believe that Butch's sister, Dawn, killed the five family members, and then Butch killed Dawn. The events of the night might never be fully explained, but the story of the house following the DeFeo murders begins a new chapter full of horrors and hauntings.
Have you guys ever heard of the serial killer, Son of Sam? Is what he used to call himself.
In New York?
Yeah, Cropsey.
I'm not familiar. Yeah, I've heard of it. I'm not super familiar with it. It's pretty dark.
So you can't
He killed a bunch of people, and I think they were mainly girls, if I remember right. But he claimed that demons made him do it.
There's just demons all over the place in New York, it seems. Because he was up there as well.
There's a lot of people, Jamin. There's a lot of people.
A lot of people
to possess.
Now, that's a lot of dead people in a house, so it's going to be haunted, right? That's what we're getting at?
Yes. Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
Damn, some ghosts in that house now.
There's some ghosts in this house. There's some ghosts in this house.
Following the DeFeo murders, the house was put up for sale at a discounted price due to the events that took place. The Lutz family purchased the house in December of 1975, just over 1 year after the murders. The family thought that they were getting a deal of a lifetime. George and Kathy Lutz had three children, Daniel, age 9, Christopher, age 7, and Melissa, age 5. All the children came from Kathy's previous marriage, so George thought the house would be a great fresh start for the entire family. George and Kathy held their wedding in July that year, so this would be the first time they actually lived together. Little did they know that over the next 28 days, their lives would change forever.
That's a required disclosure if there's been a murder in the house.
It's almost nowadays, I feel like the price should almost go up if there's been a murder in the house. Like, it's got some history to it.
Well, some of them are expensive, depending on the house.
Depending on the murder.
I mean, if it's just like a random murder, no. But if it's like a big one like this, like, that house is probably worth quite a bit of money.
It's worth quite a bit, but maybe not as much. So I got the numbers here. Actually, they purchased it for $8,000 in 1975, which when adjusted for, $80,000 in 1975, which adjusted for inflation is $388,969 in 2021. Families have been moving in and out of it. And I have a record of the two last purchases. The first one was in 2010 and they purchased it for $950,000, which is insane. Thing like almost tripled its price. And they did a lot of work to it. It's New York. It's a very nice house in New York, right up to the water, 5 bedrooms. They did a lot of work to it. They improved it. They increased the boathouse. They improved the pool and made it a lot better. But then they tried to sell it in 2016 and they could only get $605,000 for it. So
I wonder if it was on HGTV.
HGTV Dream Home?
Yeah. Maybe Chip and Joanna go and fix it up.
This would be fun.
That's a little far away from Waco.
Yeah.
Now, we really want an open concept here and show where every murder took place.
We're going to make this room all red.
Like Christian Grey's red room.
Speaking of the red room, this house did have a hidden red room, which we'll reveal later. Stay tuned. Now, here's a bargain of a lifetime. For an extra $400, they were able to purchase all of the furniture left behind by the DeFeos, including the blood-stained mattresses. What a steal.
Yeah.
That's a steal of a deal.
I'd throw those mattresses out.
Immediately. But they didn't. And they're just coming from a small apartment from downtown New York. So this is them like getting out and getting more room. So they could probably really use all that extra furniture. But it's got some dark history behind it. Within the first hour of the Lutz arriving, their dog tried to hang itself by jumping over a fence while it was chained. But the leash was too short to reach the ground on the wrong side of the fence, so the dog was hanging there helpless. George was able to save the dog before it suffocated. Not a good start to your house.
That dog had depression. Poor pup.
One of George's friends knew about what took place in the house and convinced them to have a priest bless the house before they moved in. George and Kathy weren't very spiritual, but they figured it couldn't hurt. George knew a Catholic priest named Father Mancuso. It's convenient.
Wasn't spiritual, but he knew a priest.
I know a guy.
What do we need, cleansing? I got a guy.
So on December 18th, the Lutz family was unpacking when Father Mancuso arrived to bless the house. The priest figured it'd be an uneventful blessing like the hundreds he's done before, but upon his first flick of holy water, he heard a masculine voice say,
"Get out!"
Father Mancuso finished the blessing and quickly left the property without telling the Lutz family what he heard. 6 days later, on Christmas Eve, George Lutz received a phone call. It was Father Mancuso. The priest warned George to stay out of the second floor room. This was the location that Father Mancuso heard the voice. Soon after he warned him about the room, the call turned to static and dropped. Later, it was revealed that Father Mancuso developed a high fever and blisters all over his hands following his visit to the Lutz's house.
I don't know why he didn't just tell him then. Like, why do you gotta wait?
It's not your one job. Like, hey, how's the blessing? Any demons? Nope, no blessings. Gotta go. Thanks, thanks for having me.
Hey, would you look at the time?
Yeah, I gotta get out of here.
My altar boy will send you the bill.
I think I gotta go to Home Depot and go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I got some other stuff I gotta do, so gotta get out of here.
Why are you sweating so much? You're covered in blisters. No, it's fine, it's fine.
I was watching Cops.
Soon after they arrived, George would wake up every night at 3:15 a.m. feeling restless and often hearing strange noises from different locations in the house. 3:15 a.m. was the same time the DeFeo murder supposedly took place. Just a little FYI. George began to become ill and lost a lot of weight. He could never get warm and spent most of his time outside chopping wood so that they could keep the fire running around the clock. George also became more aggressive and began to snap and yell at the family for seemingly no reason. Okay, it's stressful. It's a big house. It's a cold New York winter, and it's a new family. You gotta assert dominance, right?
No, I'm just trying to explain it away as we go through.
Back then, it was probably like a normal day in the office, you know?
I've already had 8 bourbons. Leave me alone.
Why am I still cold? I drink to stay warm.
Needs his liquor blanket.
It doesn't actually, that is, but it actually doesn't keep you any warmer.
Yeah, but it makes your death more enjoyable.
It just makes you think you're warmer.
I'll watch Mythbusters episode on it. They enjoyed that. They enjoyed making that episode. They were trashed for 90% of it. So Kathy began to experience her own abnormalities. She would travel from room to room and feel a shift in the atmosphere and once felt a cold embrace of a young woman. Soon, another strange occurrence appeared. Hundreds of dead flies would appear out of nowhere in the upstairs bedroom, the same room the family was warned to avoid. It seemed as though the flies were spawning inside the room, and no matter what they did, every day there were more flies dead on the floor. Being midwinter in New York, there should not be any flies present, so it was highly unusual. Another strange discovery was made when Kathy was cleaning the basement and behind a bookshelf, she discovered a small hidden room that wasn't included in any of the house's blueprints. The room would be known as the Red Room due to the decaying red paint on the walls. Kathy said that a rancid smell came from the room, but they were never able to locate the source.
Christian Grey.
Christian Grey?
Shitty movies.
50 Shades of Gray.
Oh my gosh, that one.
Horrible movies.
Great movies. Great movies. That's what you meant to say.
I haven't had the pleasure to enjoy any of the shades.
Oh, well, I own all of them, so we can watch all 3 of them tonight.
There's 3 of them? No, there's not.
Yep.
Yeah. They get worse. 50
Shades, 50 Shades Darker.
50 Shades.
50 Shades After? 50 Shades
Darker, and 50 Shades Freed.
50 Shades Freed. Come on. They're not even trying anymore.
Adam also has all the magic mics, so.
I do.
And you haven't seen the Titanic.
Have you seen Matthew McConaughey in that? The law says you cannot touch. But I think it's a lot of lawbreakers up in here tonight.
Is that your McConaughey?
Yeah, that's Matthew McConaughey.
Is McConaughey in that movie? He's like 50 or 60.
Yes, he is in that movie. And he looks great, Jamin.
It's all that weed keeping him slim. Their daughter, Melissa, also started to express strange behavior. Melissa claimed that she made a friend named Jody. When her parents asked her about her friend, they were shocked at what she said. Melissa said that Jody looked like a large pig boy and they would talk. Jody said that she was happy that they were there and she is going to be living there forever. Melissa told her mom that Jody had red eyes and would watch her through the window at night. We've all had imaginary friends, right?
So my mom, she had a friend who they had like a, I think it was her friend. They had a daughter. And she used to have a imaginary friend that was a boy, and she'd always talk to him all the time. And the mom was like, so what does your friend look like? And she said that he had boo-boos on his eyes. So they're like, okay, that's kind of weird. And she told her mom about it. I guess it was like the same house, and the mom like got like pale.
The same house as what?
I think it was this, well, I don't know. I can't remember the whole story, but.
Seems like an important part of the story. Go on.
Yeah, probably. But the mom was.
Like, well, you said the same house and you didn't ever say any other.
Oh, I don't know.
But no, go on, go on. I'm intrigued.
So the mom was like in shock and like turned pale. And she told her daughter that they had a son back in the day that ended up dying, and they donated like his eyes. They think that the imaginary friend was actually like the ghost of that boy.
Ooh, kids are creepy. Oh, I can't stand them. Ah, kids are scary. I think up to age 11, they've got something that's not matured where they're able to see things that we aren't or connect to a spiritual level that matured people just lose the ability to. And it's creepy. I mean, I've seen a number of videos where it's like baby is obviously interacting or watching somebody and the dog will join in and be like, huh, there's something in that corner that's not showing up. Seems very clear. Terrifying.
I need to talk to my mom about, I can't remember the whole story. I'll have to ask her tonight when I see her.
Events became more and more frequent. They would hear footsteps and voices at night. Black spots started to appear on the carpet. The china began to turn black along with the water in the toilets. And green ooze started to drip from the walls. They couldn't explain what was happening and felt as though they were going insane. On January 14th, 1976, the family experienced the worst of it, and to this day, they refuse to talk about the events that took place that night. All that we know is that the entire family met at the bottom of the stairs by the front door in tears and left the house, never to return. And Hollywood's had a heyday with that final night. I think it's been portrayed different ways every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Most of the event, these events have just been picked up by Hollywood.
Inspired by a true story.
Oh, they love that title. And so do the fans.
Based on true events.
It's like, okay, that's what? There was someone named Mark one time somewhere.
Like in 300, like they have like freaking crazy monsters and shit in there.
When the bad guy emerged from a pool of gold, I started to ask questions. So Channel 5 picked up the story and decided to do some investigating on their own. With permission from the Lutz, the news crew hired some renowned paranormal researchers to look into the matter. Included on their team were renowned experts Ed and Lorraine Warren. And you may remember these two from our Annabelle series. They are probably going to pop up throughout a variety of our episodes.
Yeah, any big paranormal activity, they're probably there.
They probably came up with it.
During this time period.
So on March 6, 1976, the paranormal investigation began. Almost immediately, people were acting strangely. And just so I clarify before we go any farther, this group is made up of Ed, Lorraine, like two or three mediums, psychics, the news crew with a couple camera
guys all wandering throughout the house. So it's kind of a situation where I could see them trying to show up each other. Like everyone's, each one of the people's trying to one up the next person. They're all wandering throughout this haunted house.
I'm feeling something.
Oh. And then the person downstairs is like, oh, it's even stronger here. Quick, send the cameraman. We can't. He's dead on the floor. What? Well, almost immediately, people were acting strangely. Steve was one of the cameramen for Channel 5. As soon as Steve reached the second story landing, he clutched his chest and fell to the floor. It's believed that he suffered a minor heart attack. The group held a seance led by Lorraine Warren. Lorraine felt an evil from the bowels of the earth trying to connect with her and saw visions of bodies in a line with red sheets over them. It should be noted that the news crew wanted the investigation to be as credible as possible, so they did not tell any of the psychics or researchers about what took place in the house. Ed and Lorraine swear that they had no idea what happened before they arrived. Ed wandered into the basement and was overwhelmed by a strange, suffocating sensation. He felt like his face was underneath rushing warm water and was preventing him from catching his breath. He demanded that any evil spirits release him, and following his demand, he was able to regain his breath. At the same time Ed experienced a spiritual waterboarding, Lorraine claimed to have felt the same drowning sensation upstairs. It's all fun and games until the producer speaks up. Well, the news reporters were not able to gather enough video evidence to create a story, so they had to cut the segment and the entire excursion was thought to be a bust. Upon further investigation, there was one photo that has never been debunked and still stands as one of the most credible pieces of evidence of paranormal presence. So if you scroll down here, this is the photo. We'll put it up on our Twitter. I'll shoot it out on our Twitter, so check it out there. But this is the photo taken at the second story, and that room on the left is where they had the sewing room, where the priest had that voice speak to him and all the flies were found. So they set up a still camera that just kept shooting random photos once every 10 minutes. There's a bunch of other ones that they show and there's nothing, nothing's appearing. And then they captured one that has what looks like a young boy peering out of the room. And the terrifying thing about this is that there were no children in the house during the investigation. So no one has been able to debunk this photo. And other photos of the same location will show you that there's nothing that can even resemble part of the stairs right there, like part of the banister is upward that might look like a face. Comparing the photo with the photo of John Matthew is strikingly similar. They have strikingly similar features.
Yeah, I can see it.
Spooky.
Ghost Boy's creepy as shit.
Yeah, well, like a little grainy, but I could see it.
It's the 70s. They're trying their best. So when George Lutz showed his daughter, Melissa, the photo, she said that the boy in the photo is the same person that she used to talk to outside of her window. I mean, sure, he doesn't have any pig features, like they originally said, but still creepy. Spooky.
Creepy.
And Lorraine Warren claimed that the Amityville house was the closest they ever felt to being in hell and offered $3,000 to anyone that could prove the house is not possessed. No one was ever able to prove that the house was not haunted. But I should also mention that a lot of people have moved in and lived in that house ever since then, and no one's ever experienced anything. So it's pretty hard to prove that something's not haunted. How do you do that?
Proving a negative is very, very difficult. Like proving we're not in a simulation.
Don't go down the simulation wormhole again.
Pretty much impossible.
Don't have time for that. Oh, my brain is already exhausted. Okay, so there's a few theories and maybe a little bit of fact checking that we should do, which we kind of covered most of it throughout the episode. But the first one is that the house is haunted and the DeFeo family is still wandering around. To this day.
Just chilling. Just hanging out.
Yeah.
Doing ghost things.
Or it's a glitch in the simulation, but I mean...
Adam, whatever. don't you send us down that wormhole. You can't prove that you're not in a simulation, because if you did prove it, it proves that you are in a simulation. We can't get into it, because it only hurts my brain.
That was the worst. If you did prove it, it would prove that you were.
That's what I'm saying. Obviously. You can't not prove it.
All right. Continue.
Okay, the other one is that it's a portal to hell. That basement red room is a hidden portal that may have been used.
Oh, it was in the basement?
The red room was hidden under the basement stairs.
Oh, then yeah, definitely a portal to hell.
I'm convinced. It's got to be a portal to hell, right? Some ancient witches were in there in the 1920s and opened up a demon hole.
Gross.
Yeah, that's a little nasty, but another theory is that it's a Indian burial site.
This one kind of out of the woodworks. Another paranormal researcher came to the house a couple years after this Channel 5 investigation took place. He called out and took on the personality of an Indian chief from the early days. And apparently they built the house on top of an Indian burial ground. But of course, there's not much proof and no records that show that Indians actually resided in that area. The closest tribe that they could find was 70 miles north of where they were. But hey, she connected with one.
Native Americans, thank you.
Native Americans, okay. And the final one is that Butch's lawyer, William Weber, and the Lutz family made the whole thing up. And this came about—
So they didn't actually die?
Oh, they're dead. The whole family, they're dead. But Butch's lawyer talked to the Lutz family and had what he said, numerous bottles of wine, and came up with this whole fabrication of the house being haunted to help with the, help Butch's case.
Well, with the Lutz family. I was thinking it was the DeFeo family you were talking about. And then
not only would this benefit the Lutz by them making a lot of money from the book deal and every movie since, they also signed in Butch to receive compensation for part of the story and including him. So the lawyer's like, hey, I can make money, you can make money. And apparently they worked out a contract.
That is a ethical dilemma right there for the lawyer.
Well, ethical dilemma, pathical dilemma. But also, it worked if that was their original story, if that was what they did, because over 21 movies, so many books, they're set for life.
Jamin.
Ryan Reynolds.
Your house is haunted.
I'm going to be rich. That's my first thought. All right. Well, we may never know the truth about the Amityville Horror House, but one thing is for sure. Hollywood is going to continue to milk that cash cow dry, and we just have to hope the justice was served.
So that leaves a question. Would you guys move into a house where murder has happened?
Nope.
Is it discounted?
Maybe.
Just kidding. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would.
No.
It'd be a nice little... I think I would enjoy it, just having friends and family come over and giving the house tour, being like, and this chair is where four family members were murdered by their oldest son. Having that as part of your daily, your house tour every time you show someone around, I think we'd add a little pizzazz to the place.
No chance. What about you, Isaiah?
I probably already do live in one. I have an old house made in the 60s.
They would have disclosed
that old. They probably wouldn't disclose it if it was that far away, you know?
Yeah, they would.
How would they know?
It's literally required by law.
Now, what if someone died in the house?
Yeah, but not just murdered? Like choked on a pebble or something.
Yeah, fruity pebble. A delicious way to die.
What were you going to say, Jamin?
It's magically delicious.
Do you have to disclose what?
If you just die of natural causes or not murder.
I'm pretty sure. I can't remember.
I could see like murder they have to disclose, but maybe if you just died of old age or something else, then there's certain areas that are acceptable. A cult was practicing in your basement. I feel like that should be disclosed as well.
But some states require to report if somebody has died in the house, just because people are superstitious and stuff. But not every state, just if it's like a natural death. But if it relates to the property at all, I think they have to.
Yeah, it sounds like a California rule.
Yeah, actually.
Well, like I said, we'll never really know. We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out how the story ends on the next movie that comes out from Hollywood, because I'm sure they will get the story right.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They'll tell us the truth.
Yeah, they
will.
We'll
see how Ryan Reynolds solved this mystery.
So, if you want to give us a follow on our social media, you can find us at The Unsolved Dimension on Twitter and Instagram, and you can send us a message, questions, whatever you want.
And if you want to reach out directly and send us an email, we'd be happy to write you back and open up a dialogue. And you can reach us at theunsolveddimension@gmail.com. That is theunsolveddimension@gmail.com.
And if you guys want to get on Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review and a comment, we will give you guys an old shout out on our next episode.
And we have a little shout out to give today.
Oh,
to
do we?
D_Zilkey.
Oh.
I don't know these guys personally. I would never hang out with podcasters. But Tud Pod is definitely a 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Well, thanks, D_Zilkey. D_Zilkey. That means a lot, man.
We appreciate you. We appreciate the support.
Hey, and we'd be happy to hang out with you.
Even though you're not happy to hang out with us.
It's fine. It's fine.
We'll still hang out
with you. It's okay. I don't mind.
So you can catch us next time on The Unsolved Dimension.
All right. Well, all you people have a great week. Drive home, work out, sleep, if we put you to sleep. Sorry about that. And we'll see you next Monday. Doodles.
Peace.
Bye-bye.